Very happy to introduce our next speaker. She joins us again. She was with us in 2004. For those of you who may have been there back at St. Mary Medical Center in our beginning, I think that was our second or maybe third annual conference that year. And Teresa Notari is the Assistant Director of Natural Family Planning Program for the Secretariat for Laity, Marriage, and Family, Life, and Youth for the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. In that role, Dr. Notari is responsible for supporting the Catholic Diocese in their efforts to create or strengthen NFP ministries. So it's a perfect storm that we have going here to be able to move this forward. Dr. Notari's expertise is in church teaching on human sexuality, marriage and family life, conjugal love and responsible parenthood, contraception, and the methods of natural family planning. She has a special interest in church history and ecumenism. Dr. Notari is widely published on these topics in mostly popular pastoral articles and resources. She has given numerous talks and presented many papers in the Diocese of the United States, as well as appeared on EWTN and Catholic Radio. Dr. Notari was appointed to the USCCB's Consultation for Anglican Catholic Dialogue in 2007. She was born in the Archdiocese of Newark, and Dr. Notari completed her graduate studies in theology and church history in California, in Rome, and in Washington, D.C. She received her PhD from Catholic University of America, and she is a member of a large Italian-American extended family, enjoys sewing, ballet, and occasionally teaches Pilates exercise, for which there will be a class right after her talk. And she resides in Washington, D.C., so I'd like to ask you to welcome Dr. Notari. Thank you.
Thank you. I have to say it's always very important to get out on the road and speak with all of you because you are my inspiration. I have known this from the beginning. When I first started Xeroxing and filing as a summer job for Bishop McHugh, he had a satellite office of our office up in New Jersey in his rectory at Sacred Heart Cathedral in Newark, New Jersey. And he had hired me to run that for the summer before I went off to graduate school in Berkeley, California, which terrified him, and I didn't understand at the time why. I thought he was just being a little bit too hung up like my parents. But in any case, you are the inspiration. You do get it. The rest of us who have fallen in love with the church's teachings and have reached a type of conversion, we get it from you. Because even when I was studying all of this with Bishop McHugh and I realized how beautiful the teachings were, I kept saying to him, but is it realistic? Does it really work in real life? And despite the fact that my parents were rhythm users and followed church teaching, but their generation didn't witness the way you all do, I have to say maybe 2 years into working with Bishop McHugh, because of working with natural family planning couples, the light bulb went off in my own head, and I thought, wow, it really is true. Oh, my goodness, why doesn't anybody talk about this? So I think we all have our own versions of these aha moments, and you are a big part of it. Well, today we are going to talk about women, and I'm so glad that we talked about the men first. Oh, might I add, 9 years ago, I didn't need glasses, and I did bump up the font size on my printed talk. And it still doesn't work. For God's sake, I don't know how big I need to make them. So I will do the old lady thing and look up at you as well as look down. Anyhow, this is the topic we're looking at, natural family planning and women. And when it comes to women in NFP, of course, you all know there are a host of issues that influence a woman regarding acceptance and use of natural family planning. And these issues will take in nothing less than personal needs, hopes, life goals, understanding of their fertility, desires regarding marriage, children, and family, And understandably, it is a complex issue because people are not divorced from the culture in which they live. So there are also cultural expectations and ways of perceiving these things. One's education enters the picture as well as one's socioeconomic bracket. And, of course, religious beliefs play a significant role. And today, of course, our focus is narrow, since I will speak about the American Catholic women of reproductive age. And in doing that, I have to say that when you step back from what we will consider today, I do think that the information is applicable to non-Catholic women as well. So let's get started. Many of you have probably seen this report that came out in 2012 by Michelle Hill and Mary Rice Hassan on what Catholic women think about faith, contraception, and conscience. And they told us something that we all know, that your average Sunday-going Catholic woman in the pew does not fully support church teaching on contraception. However, as they investigated further, when active in the full sacramental life of the church, and that means especially Mass and confession, Catholic women will agree in larger numbers than other less active Catholic women. And added to that, and this is something very, very important for us, many express partial agreement and are open to learning more about church teachings in this area of life. So in other words, the majority of the women in church on any given Sunday are open to learning about what church teaching means, why we teach what we teach about conjugal love, responsible parenthood, and NFP. And this also confirms exactly what NFP teachers have been finding out for years, and that is when their clients express to them, wow, and what I just said, I didn't know this. This is the best-kept secret in the church. As one NFP blogger recently wrote, and I love this quote, she was a young adult Catholic woman. She said, I see a generation of Catholic women who are poised to reject the lies of secular culture and embrace the fullness of their church's teachings, but who will need a lot of help to get there. So if the data I described is true, and the majority of Catholic women who are at Mass on any given Sunday are open to receiving the messages of the church, why is this organization still struggling, right? Why are our classes still poorly attended and our NFP providers not having to hire more staff to train more teachers and provide more classes? Well, we know the answer as well to that one, and it's important to take a little look at them and remind ourselves again. First of all, we live in a culture that puts forth a false understanding of the human person, especially when it comes to sex and sexuality. And this false perception of the person, as we know, has led to the deconstruction of marriage. It's led to questioning what family is. And we're in a bit of a public squabble over all of that now, aren't we? And I do have to say this false image, and we could talk about this later if you're interested, because that's what I did my dissertation on. it reaches back to the 19th century. It did not start with the 1960s. So that's important to know. Also, there is nearly a worldwide worship of medical technology with very few ethical restrictions placed on it. In addition, and sadly, within the church, there has been an inconsistently taught sexual ethic since Humanae Vitae was promulgated. And, of course, we have limited resources. How many physicians really do know this information? And how many teachers do we have or couples using NFP who can keep passing on the information? Now, I've seen the numbers grow over the years, but it's still far too small. We are truly David, only a really bitty, teeny, tiny David with a big Goliath in front of us, but still we have the Lord with us to make all things possible. So we have to work on this issue of resources. And unfortunately, as the title of my presentation hints, there is a more fundamental problem. a large number of parents do not teach the truth to their children about the nature and meaning of human sexuality, marriage, why it's important to get married and not cohabit with a partner, the value of human fertility, the importance of building a family, of having children younger rather than older. And when it comes to women in particular and what women need to hear from their mothers, we have a further complicated problem, and that is that the mothers today, more than likely, have had multiple sexual partners before they married. The average, from most studies, puts women at about 6 or 7, men at about 8 or 9 before they marry. All of these people have used contraceptives. Remember that the birth control pill is the second most used contraceptive. Sterilization really is the most popular among people. And we've got that whole business of sexually transmitted diseases. Some people might even still have some of these lifelong diseases that still they're embarrassed about. How can these women speak to their daughters about the information that we know on the value of chastity, on the signs of fertility, on the meaning of human sexuality in marriage, and natural family planning in particular? They just don't know it. Now, when you also add to this picture the complex issue of our public school system and how comprehensive sex education has played into it, we've got, as we know, a more thorny problem going on. We have way too many people who have been groomed to believe that contraception is a normal, responsible, and, quote, even healthy way of behaving when you are a sexually active person. They say it's values-free, but we know it's not, because if you're telling people to use contraception in this way, you are telling them that it is valuable and it is positive. So there's no such thing as values-free. And then when you add to that problem the fact that the federal government has gotten involved and is insisting on this contraceptive mandate with healthcare insurance, everybody is basically saying something to women about sex and contraception, and we know most of these messages are either partial truths or downright lies. But there's still good news in this picture. Women are interested in long-lasting, until death do us part, kinds of relationships. And they need to find out what will give them that. And so in order to organize our thinking about what women need to know about natural family planning, I've decided to use the research of Hill and Hassan. And I've got 4 points that they pull out in their research that women are especially confused about. Number one, that NFP is doable. That NFP works is the second point. Most women don't think it does work. That there are benefits of special interest to women. And that Catholic teaching is actually a gift for women, not another difficult, horrible imposition of something restrictive. If we have some time by way of a conclusion, I do want to look at a few points of communicating these messages at this point in time and in light of the new evangelization, because even though it may be a burr under some other people's skin, we've been told at the bishops' conference that we have to talk about this. So in their research, Hassan and Hill discovered some troubling misconceptions that women hold, Catholic women hold, about natural family planning and church teaching. With regard to the topic of it not being doable, they often complain or say that they think it's too complicated for them. It's too technical. It's too medical. It's just not for them because of their irregular cycles, or their husband just wouldn't be able to abstain. They absolutely can't even think about that. It's just not realistic for them. In addition, they also think that something like the concept that NFPers talk about of shared responsibility, means that the husband agrees with them to avoid having pregnancy. They think shared responsibility is to avoid pregnancy. So it's very much a contraceptive mentality. And as for openness to life, that's a lovely phrase in church teaching, they think it means the church insists that every woman have as many babies as humanly possible. So if we want to help women embrace these teachings and NFP as a tool to live out these teachings, we have to dispel these myths. So let's look at NFP being doable. The first message that I think that we need to communicate to women is that it is based on science. It is not based on guesswork. So when a woman understands her normal, healthy, natural reproductive biomarkers or signs of fertility, if you tell her about this, you can help her understand that that's a way that she can better plan to attempt as well as avoid a pregnancy with her husband. In addition, there's a huge plus. You can let her know this is a real tool for safeguarding your overall health, especially that of your fertility. I do have a warning here, and this is only for NFP educators and promoters, and that is please, please, please find simple ways and tactful ways to speak with women in the beginning. I can't tell you, I've been at the NFP business since 1984, and honest to God, it is an information dump. All you have to do is say to somebody, oh, I teach NFP, and somebody says, a woman says, well, what's that all about? And the NFP educator gushes. You have to be very mindful in a first conversation, even an introductory talk, not to overload your audience with too much information. The typical layperson will just glaze over and will say, that's just way too information for me, and then they won't hear you. So the seed that you're trying to plant is going to probably fall on hard ground. And in addition, and this is another facet that is so contradictory in our culture today, and that is we live in this permissive culture where sex seems to be everywhere. And yet, this really is a very delicate topic. And it is important to find a tactful way to explain things to people, especially people who are complete strangers that you don't know. We are so used to talking about cervical mucus, changes in the cervix, the basal body temperature, struggles with abstinence. When it comes to the reality of living the sexual relationship, people get uncomfortable. So it is important when you are speaking with people to be mindful of that, maybe even periodically ask your listener, would you like to know more, or would you like me to send you some resources, or I've got this pamphlet that I can give to you right now, that kind of thing. You have to put them at ease and find ways to allow them to take in all of this information, which will be completely new to them. So, in any case, with regard to keeping it simple and speaking with a woman, here are a few simple ways of talking about the basics of NFP. That a woman's body provides several basic ways to identify her fertile and infertile times. That the fall and rise of the female reproductive hormones are responsible for those signs. And that NFP education helps the woman recognize the pattern of those physical signs that forms the basis for all methods. You don't need to go into the details of every single method in an introductory conversation. If she asks more, you can distill it down even further and say, well, there's a group of NFP methods that teach you to take a look at one of your primary signs of fertility, and other methods will teach you how to look at many of your signs or a few of your signs. You know, please don't say single index, multiple index method. That will also make them glaze over, too. And the example of text I'm giving you right now is from a brochure that we have had around for a while at the Bishop's Conference. It's an introduction to NFP. Let me walk over here and see if I got it. Yes, I do have it with me. We just gave it a facelift at the Bishop's Conference. we rewrote the text so it would be much more modern. I think you'll all enjoy taking a look at this. We also did a facelift to our myths and realities, bringing the text up to, a tighter construction of what people need to know when it's just basic information. But I wanted especially for you to see the paragraph on cervical mucus. Notice that we say, around the time of ovulation, a fluid or mucus is released from the woman's cervix. And then we have the definition in parentheses. We have found in informal surveys that women do not respond well to the word mucus, that there's an ick factor. They think of their nose. They think of something disgusting. Now, we know this is NFP terminology, but if you could preface it by at least helping them think it through, that this is a fluid or mucus, we call it cervical mucus. Actually, some of the fertility awareness people, the FAM people who do mix contraception with NFP information, a good many of them now, because of Tony Weschler's book, Taking Charge of Your Fertility, have switched over to referring to cervical mucus as cervical fluid. It seems to be a phrase that your average layperson will understand more readily. But in any case, it's simple. It's simply stated. With the BBT, which we know can be very complicated, just describe it as the waking temperature that's taken after several hours of uninterrupted sleep. This is an introduction, and that explaining the rise and the fall is related to the signals of the fertile time of the cycle ending, et cetera. So you can take a look at the brochures. I'll leave them out on the table for you when we're done. But in any case, that is an important concept to keep in mind even when you're looking to develop printed resources on NFP. Try to keep it as simple as possible. And, oh, by the way, just updating a Bishop's Conference resource, not only my advisory board, but several NFP coordinators who have big countries around the nation, big ministry in their dioceses around the nation. I had to have them take a look, and they all had their say. And it took us probably 6 months to get the language down and tight to reflect what they're hearing with working with couples in the dioceses. So it is a process. Now, the second thing that women need to know is that NFP is adaptable, that any woman can use NFP. And as you would also be clear about, very first topic that the woman needs to know, dispelling that myth, is that she need not have regular menstrual cycles, that NFP information treats each cycle as unique within the woman, each woman unique, each cycle unique. That is something that women absolutely need to know, because everybody thinks that their menstrual cycle is so unique to them and no one else can understand, oh, the problems I have. So that's a huge message to communicate. Now, education on natural family planning, it's also important to help the woman understand that when she actually goes through the education, she will learn how to fully understand and interpret her signs of fertility and what that means when it's combined with her husband's fertility. Again, always with this both and idea of to attempt a pregnancy, to avoid a pregnancy. In addition, we can say it is easy to learn, but it will need some effort. So on the one hand, don't minimize the effort, but don't scare the women either. I know in the past that the trend in the country was always to put the emphasis on NFP is easy, NFP is easy, and well, it's not that easy. The basic information may be easy to take in, but actually applying it to your own life where you have so many other things that will impact your processing of the information as I said, personal fears, personal styles of learning, that kind of thing, will impact how a woman will internalize this information. So let them know that it's going to take some requirements. And among the requirements that they need to pay attention to, and this is important because it will involve their husbands, that it's going to require behavior change as individuals as well as a couple, that it will require commitment, that the husband will have to commit along with the wife to use the method in accordance with their family planning intentions, whether or not they are trying to discern to attempt or postpone a pregnancy. Help the woman understand that these methods are we-oriented, couple-focused, and in fact, you can let the woman know that a key to understand, to effectively using the methods is for the couple to learn together. That's probably the best way that they can get into NFP. And the woman will be especially interested in that because she likes when her husband has to learn about her. There's something about women. I don't know. I get this image sometimes of these cartoons that they would have of the little prissy girl with the big pink mirror just, you know, like patting her face and the little glittery stars around her that she's so pleased with herself. It's not that we're egocentric. It's that the woman's way of doing things is to get herself settled first, you know, so that she can take care of people. And to have this idea that a way of planning births in our pregnancy, in our marriage, postponing births, et cetera, this idea of family planning is a we thing, is huge for a woman. And also, just in case she has some type of anxiety about learning all of this, she'll view it as medical information. Just in case she has that anxiety, you have to let her know that NFP education allows access to the teachers even after the initial learning process is over. And this is, again, underscore it as very important. And you don't have to do all the work yourselves, because at this point in time, there are many online NFP providers that have programs that do take emails from clients. In fact, I can't tell you, my office does not offer any education to the clients. But I have a whole email address, the nfp@usccb.org, which most of those emails coming in are women asking questions about their cycles. And then I ask them permission, and then I farm it out to an expert NFP teacher who will answer for me. Some of them I can answer, but not all. And trust me, they get into a lot of detail. So it's very important for a woman with NFP education to let her know that she has a lifeline to help her if she is confused. Now on to a huge requirement of NFP. With regard to periodic sexual abstinence, women need to know NFP, the means to avoid a pregnancy, is periodic sexual abstinence. But the good news for all of us as NFP educators, and this is, again, based on the research of Hassan and Hill, and I can also tell you anecdotally throughout the dioceses this is true as well, women do not have objections to periodic sexual abstinence. In fact, in the research, they say 2 weeks could be terrific. They don't mind one little bit. But there's a very big however. And the big however is they express anxiety that their husbands will not have a good view of periodic sexual abstinence. And in some of the comments that Hassan and Hill shared with me the raw data, so in looking at some of the qualitative research where you see these comments, wow, you know, some women just don't think their husbands can abstain at all, not even for a day. And you know, coincidentally, as I was reviewing that research, we had another big research survey thing going on in the conference where all staff were required in the pastoral offices to spend a whole day listening to the qualitative videotape research data that we had of what they called blue ribbon Catholics. Catholics who were involved in their parish, who even went to daily mass every day, and finding out about their perceptions on key church teachings, especially the hot button issues, birth control, of course, being one of them. And holy smokes, all I can tell you is we sat there with our mouths dropped open as, you know, you'd hear a person say something like, my husband and I use contraception, and we don't think that the church really knows what they're doing on that. It's just so unrealistic. And that kind of stuff, that you can still find that inconsistency among these blue ribbon Catholics who are actively involved in their parishes. There's still a lot of ignorance going on. And again, that comment that my husband would never be able to abstain is rampant, and it was even in that data that we looked at. So in order to alleviate anxieties about a woman's worries over her husband, let her know that, again, NFP education and practice requires couple communication. Help her understand that the husband can be encouraged to help with the charting, and that will get him, and you can tell her this, to internalize her cycle into his psyche. That is huge, to get a man to think cyclically about fertility. And that will give him a deeper understanding of her, and as I said, women really appreciate that. They want to feel known and understood, not taken for granted, and supported. So just these simple tactics that we have of NFP education can help the woman. Of course, as we said, it's a shared responsibility, and I'll get to that a little bit later, because I want to say something about supporting spousal love. Among the things that women don't understand, and I would bet men don't understand this either, there is a very funny cultural attitude that when it comes to sex in marriage, that frequency of sexual intercourse will equal strength of spousal love. And couples need to understand, or I should say they probably have this idea that because frequency of sex, they're thinking, equals strong spousal love, contraception then becomes critical. In their mind, they think that you need to have contraception in order to have a strong marriage. And if I practice periodic sexual abstinence, won't that harm our marital love, our spousal love? Now, what men and women need to hear, first of all, is that most marital sexual encounters are planned, or at least happen in situations favorable to lovemaking that are typically set up by agreement regardless of the family planning method used. Otherwise, in the press of daily life, and we all know this, jobs, household chores, social commitments, demands of children, who's got to go to ballet, who's got to go to soccer, a husband and wife would never have sex. And then the dog jumps on the bed in the middle of everything. So couples need to understand that when you're married, there's a different environment within which conjugal relations happens. And it's important that men and women understand that NFP couples have sex just as much as any other couple, any other married couple. They just have it on a different schedule, according to whether they can wish to achieve or postpone a pregnancy. That's very, very important. So while on this topic of periodic sexual abstinence, let me also give you a warning, and I purposely have that picture out of focus. Do not provide a set number of days for a woman as to when she's fertile. If you give her a set number of days and communicate it in any kind of way where she thinks that's, you know, what I have to hit, she's going to be obsessed with wanting to have, that X number of days of fertility. Simply tell the woman that when spacing births, she and her husband would abstain from sexual intercourse during the fertile time of her menstrual cycle. But emphasize to her that every woman is unique, every cycle is unique, so the days of sexual abstinence will vary from woman to woman, and even within her own life. Again, I get many, many emails of women saying, is it normal for me to have 12 days of abstinence because I've got 12 days of cervical mucus? Well, first of all, I haven't even seen your charts. But they do. They get locked into a mentality. So try not to put pinpoint dates. And if you do want to give, the typical numbers that we kind of sort of know about the window of fertility, you can describe it, but always emphasize it's going to be different for every woman. But now there's also good news about periodic sexual abstinence, and women will absolutely love to hear this. And that is, and this will be important for her to communicate to her husband too, a loving invitation given in advance means a time of healthy anticipation for both husband and wife. So for NFP couples who are trying to postpone a pregnancy, such an invitation of sexual abstinence can mean living, as what you've heard today, that chaste courtship followed by a mini honeymoon. And that's especially attractive for women because, remember, a woman's vision is on the whole relationship, not just on one encounter. And as one NFP woman said to me, and I've used this story over and over again because I love it, my husband, he hasn't done one thing in the house all day long. I have had a list of to-do things. Not one thing has he fixed and hasn't spoken a full sentence to me, but he wants to have sex at night. What a turnoff. Gentlemen, you just, if the thing about the flowers, bring those flowers every week. Compliment your wife. Get the faucet fixed and, the garbage taken out. A woman looks at everything as part of the quality of the whole relationship. She sees the whole picture. A very long time ago, a priest once said to me that he thought that women had a much more comprehensive view of the full picture of love. He said a woman, through her sexuality, experiences suffering because the very first time that she has experience of herself as a woman is when she gets her period, and it doesn't feel very good. You feel sick most of the time. And then she has the experience of being in love and of having conjugal relations and having a child, even having a child. The pain of giving birth, the joy of having a child. A woman sees this whole picture, and men see only the happy side. And this priest, as I said a long time ago, gave me a very important thing to think about of what women bring to the relationship in helping men go deeper into seeing what the total picture of love is like. So there is good news about sexual abstinence. Now, the other topic of NFP works, the critical thing to get women to understand is that it works both ways. It is for achieving a pregnancy. It is for avoiding. And this is big news for the modern woman. Because remember, the modern woman has been groomed to think exclusively about sterilizing herself, neutralizing her fertility. She doesn't have any concept of authentic family planning. And so trying to get this idea of the double nature of NFP is going to be huge. At the same time, it's going to create a very thorny issue for us. Because on the one hand, we have to prove to women that NFP methods are effective for pregnancy avoidance. That is a huge concern of them. And yet, at the same time, we have to also communicate that a woman's fertility is of value and it is short-lived. achieving a pregnancy is a time-sensitive issue, and women are not told this today. This is an especially important fact of reproductive fact of life that women need to pay attention to. So with NFP education, as we talk about achieving pregnancy, we have to focus in on this fact that women's fertility is limited and that the longer a woman waits to achieve her first pregnancy, the harder it is to get pregnant. Now, again, as I said, risky business trying to have a pro-pregnancy campaign, because the emphasis in the whole culture, I have to say, from the 1960s has been sex is natural, sex is good, nobody should fear or be ashamed of sex, and even women should be interested in good sex. Those are good messages. At the same time, we've downplayed and even treated the message of getting pregnant to be almost like a burden, a scourge, and everything in the culture is geared to limiting births as if it is the worst thing that could happen to women. It's important in this climate and with this message to first affirm a woman's dreams and goals. Remember that women have been groomed also on the basic tenets of the modern feminist movement, and not all of those messages are bad. One central message that comes up from the early part of the 19th century, when feminists were first starting to speak out, is that it is important, it is good to develop personal talents and contribute to the world. That is the first message of early feminists, even before they started working for suffrage, for the vote. They wanted women to get an education and to use her gifts in the world. The early feminists were anti-contraception because they saw it as enslaving women to men's sexuality, which they thought was out of control. They wanted to raise the bar at the time for men, to get men up to the value of fertility, the value of chastity, the high calling, the virtue that women lived. And we, of course, have degraded because feminism has gone a different way. Now, while you affirm her goals and her dreams, as I said, you have to be clear about marriage and children, help a woman to understand. Please do not delay if you know that this is for you, marriage and children. And so as NFP teachers, we have to find compelling and gentle language to communicate the value of marrying and getting pregnant and starting one's family younger rather than older. All of this, again, to go back to another huge problem, attempting this within this fear factor that women have of getting pregnant. And remember, this message has been in the Western culture from the 1920s. That's when Margaret Sanger in the United States, as well as Marie Stopes in England, and it was England and the United States that led the birth control movement internationally, that's when they started planting the ideas of every child a wanted child. In some version, that was the message of the birth controllers. So women, that message, combined with our own fears, insecurities, again, the culture we're living in, the economy has been in such flux, so many people out of jobs, et cetera, and having personal desires of wanting to do something with your life and using your talents, contributing in a way, it adds to this fear factor. So we have to be mindful of this. Oops, let me go back this way. Now, the good news in terms of achieving pregnancy with regard to the fertile window is that, again, based on the research of Hassan and Hill, women understand the general concept of timing of sexual intercourse to attempt a pregnancy. But here's something else you need to know. this is unbelievable. They do not know the details and the facts of the event of ovulation and their window of fertility. There are studies, qualitative studies, where interviews have been done. I have two of them published in one of our books of a proceedings of a conference that we've had. Every 4 years, we've been doing, since 2002, I guess it was, a conference called Human Fertility, Where Faith and Science Meet. And Marquette University co-sponsors it with the Bishops Conference, and we have a few other Catholic universities that do this. Well, we've got two articles in the last proceedings that were part of the Title X grantee recipients, where they were specifically looking at low-income women or women in general and their perceptions of natural family planning. Of course, they call it fertility awareness-based methods. And in all of that research, the thing that comes up is that when women describe their fertility or how they know that they're fertile, it's a strange combination of biological information, some of it accurate, some of it not, with heaping doses of hearsay, old ideas and notions of calendar rhythm, and other things that they may have learned from their grandmothers, not even their mothers, that are mixed into the descriptions. So our answer to that is that women really need NFP education in order to know and interpret their signs of fertility accurately. Now, with regard to avoiding pregnancy, again, we don't have to get into tons of specifics, but let women know that NFP studies show that couples who follow their NFP method guidelines correctly and all the time will achieve effectiveness rates that range from as high as 97 to 99%. And then others who are unclear about their family planning intention, or are less motivated, who don't consistently follow the method guidelines, have lower rates of 85 to 95% effectiveness. And you'll be happy to know that Dr. Less and Dr. Bob, I think he's back here somewhere. I can't really see you in the back because now I've got my, you know, these are reading glasses and I don't have my seeing glasses on. But the physicians... Oh, is he out of the room? Okay. The physicians who formed the group FACTS have published a wonderful review article of NFP effectiveness studies. And they confirmed that when correctly used to avoid pregnancy, modern NFP has an unintended pregnancy rate of less than 5%. So that's within this range. And I know that we don't like to ever favorably compare NFP to contraception, but in this case of talking about effectiveness for avoiding pregnancy, we do need to let women know that these rates are comparable to commonly used hormonal and barrier contraceptives. Of course, you can always emphasize that NFP can be used with no side effects and it's cost-free. So that's always a big plus. Which brings me to the benefits of NFP. And, you know, I wanted to use this photo because this is a real photo. Donna Dowsman, the woman right back here, is a pioneer of NFP diocesan ministry. She comes from the Diocese of Springfield in Illinois. She's a Billings teacher. She and her husband, Harold. Harold is in the forefront there with four kids in front of him. They had five children, four of their five married, and that's what you see. All of their children are NFP users. All of these children were intentionally brought into the world because they used the fertile window. Donna's kids are, like, amazing. And not without the struggles, as you all know, not without suffering. One of her daughters, Jenny, I can't even see her in that mix there, but two of Jenny's children went through cancer. She had a terrible battle with her oldest child having cancer starting in her ear. For 5 years, they battled this cancer, and Morgan is cancer-free. She's a teenager. Actually, I think she's in college now. And then a few years later, Ben, one of her other children, had cancer as well, and they went through the same thing over again. Their family has a ministry now to children with cancer. They go to the children's hospital. They work with families. I mean, they're remarkable. But the terrible suffering and the struggle, life struggles don't exempt us even when we are NFP users. But the talking to women about the benefits of NFP, modern-day woman will not, you know, be too thrilled about that picture because it's going to be too shocking for them. Of 8 children to this one and 5 children to those and 7 or 9 to whoever. You don't want to show that. But getting women to start understanding the special benefits of building family will be important to women. So starting out first with among the benefits for women, it is important to let women know that NFP is different from contraception and healthier, and you know all the reasons why. No harmful side effects, supports reproductive health, and in fact can even be used to help diagnose some problems, environmentally friendly, virtually cost-free. Now, let me say, if you go down the road with a woman about comparing NFP to contraception and you want to show how bad contraception is, please make sure that you know your facts, know your research, have the studies on hand to give to people, because you cannot make a claim about a negative side effect of a contraceptive to a woman unless you can prove it. Because if you're exaggerating, she will think that you're unprofessional, that you're a zealot, that you don't know what you're talking about, and you're some sort of like crazy, way too natural person for them. You know, somebody who doesn't even use Ajax to clean out the kitchen sink. And trust me, they will have that negative attitude about you. So make sure you know your facts and you don't exaggerate your facts. We already talked about how they were adaptable and they require the couple communication as well as cooperation. I think I switched those. Shared responsibility. Now, the sexual maturity thing, our gentlemen this morning have mentioned this, and I hate to admit this, but women do have a stereotype that they have accepted about men that still lurks in our minds. And TV sitcoms, they foster this stereotype that men are boys when it comes to sex, love, and commitment. And so there is this idea that men are sexually immature, and it doesn't matter how many sexual partners that they've had. A woman would be very happy to know that the practice of NFP encourages sexual maturity, because we see maturity in general as something that equals consideration, respect, selflessness. So to get that point across to women is important. Now, there are benefits that women do need to hear about, and it will be hard for them to hear. And you'll have to do some work on this. That is, first, that NFP fosters respect for and acceptance of the total person. Now, that's great for women because we like to keep the big picture in mind. But because women have so accepted contraception, it will be very difficult for them to think that their husbands are disrespecting them just because they're using a condom. You've got to walk carefully on this one. You really will have to find ways to draw them in and find the language to get them to keep the door open. Also, the virtue of chastity, that NFP supports this. Women have been told that chastity is something for prudish, sexually hung-up people who are not in touch with their sexual selves. They don't view it as a virtue that is freeing and life-giving. And women need to reclaim chaste behavior. They're not going to hear it if mom says to them something like, don't go out there with your dress so short, you know. It's not modest behavior. That word modest, the modern women will have a turn off. They'll think that you're just, not even as cool as the Amish. So working on chastity, working on ideas of modesty, it's going to be very difficult for them to get that. But I have to say, as a woman, I do believe that in my heart of hearts, if you're having a good conversation with a woman and you talk about things like, well, you know, when you are having sex with a guy, did you know that your body releases oxytocin? That is a bonding hormone. And physically, you're going to feel more bonded to him than he is going to be to you. That's, you know, part of how you can get a woman to think about these things. And I have to say, one of the best secular arguments for chastity that I've read is Jennifer Roback Morse's book, Smart Sex. I think the subtitle is Finding Lifelong Love in a Hookup World. Women do want lifelong love. So hookup sex is not for women. That really isn't. But that is what is going on college campuses everywhere and in the real world. I was in Union Station coming here yesterday and heard this very young woman. She had to be maybe 22, maybe even 21, talking very loudly on her cell phone how angry she was at her boyfriend who was calling her, excuse me for saying it this way, but you get the idea, calling her a whore because she was flirting with some guy when he's had a threesome with some people she knew, and on top of it, she was pregnant with his baby. And I don't know why I love him, but I love him. And I'm just sitting there thinking, oh my God, you are going to fulfill everything the sociological research is showing of women who get pregnant outside of marriage, whose children do not have the benefit of a father married to a mother. You are set the trajectory to poverty, suffering, physical abuse, and even death are right there in front of you. How do you reach out to a person like that? Because the society has been drumming in these things to even our young people that it's okay and expected to have this type of sexual playground mentality. These are very hard things to communicate. And moving right along, as we said, NFP values the child, getting a woman to switch her mentality to think of getting pregnant as something that she should do. And she should do soon is hard, and honoring that unitive and procreative nature of intercourse as what God designed. These are the hard concepts to communicate, but they're hugely important for women. And they're important for women, as I said, because of this emphasis on wanting to have a long-lasting, until death do us part, marriage. When you present all of this information I've just talked about in some type of introductory way, and you get to this punchline then of can you not see how NFP is good for marriage, that it relies on this couple communication and behavior change, and the struggle of that, if you're daily doing that charting, that living with, that acceptance of NFP, we know that that seeps out into other areas of life. That self-discipline seeps out and will enhance one's marriage. And it will lead couples, as long as they're willing to stick with it and live it, it will help them deepen their relationship and have that until death do us part kind of marriage. So saying a word about shared responsibility. As I said, Hassan and Hill's research confirmed that women think this simply means my husband agrees with me to avoid a pregnancy. And what we need to do as NFP educators is help women understand that it's more. Shared responsibility is more. Their concept right now is a contraceptive mentality, but do not use that phrase with them because, again, that'll sound very harsh and judgmental to them. But help them understand that NFP education helps a husband and wife to go deeper. It's more than just spacing and limiting births. It does have to do with the whole marital relationship, their relationship with each other, with their children, and certainly with the Lord God. It is about honoring God's total gifts to them, which include, besides this spousal relationship, which you know that they're wholly focused on, but it includes this business of building up the family. If lived well, we know that they can grow to be true stewards of the gifts that God has given them. NFP, we know, has this potential to make good marriages great if they're willing to stick it out, which leads me to Catholic teachings on sex and marriage. We know that the caricature out there in the world is that the Catholic Church is anti-woman and anti-sex. And that, of course, could not be farther from the truth. Again, drawing from Hassan and Hill's research, I can tell you with regard to church teaching, women are completely wrong about their notions of what we mean by openness to life and responsible parenthood. They also don't understand why the church would promote natural family planning but prohibit contraception. They don't get the distinction. And they don't understand what the church teaches about the role of sexual pleasure in marriage. And so looking at openness to life, according to Hassan and Hill, these Catholic women that they interviewed basically said that openness to life means the church wants people to have as many babies as possible. And what we need to tell them is, the church teaches that husband and wife are to be generous and responsible stewards over their fertility. And this does not mean that the husband and wife will leave their human reason at the bedroom door. They have to bring all of this together. There are tools that they can use to live this authentic life that is based in what the Lord God wants of them. We call it responsible parenthood. And so when teaching them about responsible parenthood, I just listed basically looking at Humani Vitae and the main points of it. So they need to use their reason. They need to have a properly formed conscience. They really do need to find out what the church teaches and why. And we need to help them get there because that has been inconsistently taught. They need to have self-knowledge as individuals. And they also have to have a grip on the reality of their family life. If the husband is unemployed and the house is being foreclosed on and, you know, the kids are going to have to be brought to someplace else to live, and the family is in total chaos and flux, that is not the time to try to achieve a pregnancy. That's what you think, at least. The reality of the world in which we live, civil war is going on, the bullets are flying over your head. You're not going to think this is a great time to get pregnant. Of course, you know, with natural family planning, we know everything is in God's hands. But to reassure the modern woman that these are reasonable and just facts that have to be considered as you're looking to plan your family. And the key in all of this is respecting God's design for married love. And so I think of paragraph 10 from Humanae Vitae, which says that responsible parenthood is rooted in the objective moral order. Well, of course, they're not going to understand that. Do not say that. But to let them know that responsible parenthood and this gift that we have from God is from God. It is not invented by a bunch of drooling celibate men, because that's the caricature that is painted to women. These patriarchal men who don't want women involved in anything except for getting pregnant and being mothers, that's the caricature that you have to fight. They need to switch their thinking. They need to know that this is not just from men. This is from God himself, because it's rooted in how he created his world, how he created men to be and women to be, and the nature of marriage which he created, we did not. And so, saying it simply from Humanae Vitae, you say that responsible parenthood is lived within this structure that God's established. It honors the nature of sexual intercourse, which is both life-giving and love-making. And our responsibility is to do nothing to separate the procreative from the unitive meaning of intercourse. So again, drawing from Humanae Vitae, which I think is just a lovely quote, to experience the gift of married love while respecting the laws of conception is to acknowledge that one is not the master of the sources of life, but rather the ministers. For Catholic couples to understand that they are the ministers of life and love is huge. I think that this is something the Church really needs to do some time thinking about. Because, you know, in the Middle Ages, we used to talk about couples receiving or being called to a holy office. A holy office, I think it was either Bonaventure or Aquinas who said, a holy office in service of nature, meaning God's design. Couples are called to this holy office. Vatican II calls the gifts that a couple receives in marriage as being a kind of consecration to live the reality of marriage as God willed it. That's in paragraph 48. So we know that natural family planning are the only methods of family planning that respect the divine plan. So that leads us to this question of, well, again, they're going to be stuck on this issue. Is there really then a big deal difference? Can I have all of what you just described, but still use that condom, still stay on the pill? What is the big deal difference between NFP and contraception? Well, we say there is a difference, and it's this. When couples use contraception, either physical or chemical, they suppress their fertility, asserting that they alone have the ultimate control over this power to create new life. And in contrast, with natural family planning, spouses respect God's design for life and love. They may choose to refrain from this sexual union during the woman's fertile time, doing nothing to destroy the love-giving or life-giving meaning of that reality that is present. So, with regard to responsible parenthood, the Church isn't just supporting NFP just because it's natural. And I know I sound repetitive, but that's how much you're going to have to do to get through the contraceptive mentality of the average woman. You have to keep emphasizing that NFP respects what God has given us. And the key is respect God's design. I do another presentation in dioceses which theologically unpacks that, and it is looking at how God created the human person to be and what these gifts of being able to have the nuptial meaning of the body, what it means to be able to gift yourself to another person. Women don't understand this. Women need this because women are concerned about lifelong love. And with regard to sex, pleasure, and procreation, many people think that the Catholic Church only permits sex to procreate. They think that the Church actually condemns sexual pleasure. But the reality is that the Catholic Church wants married couples to have the best sex possible. That is, sexual pleasure in marriage is part of it's part of the marital experience. It's not the entire focus. And so when we think about it, the idea of sex being something for someone else, and that's where you derive the joy and the pleasure, is very foreign to what our culture currently sells, right? With regard to sexual pleasure, everything is about my satisfaction. But women inherently like to give of themselves. We do. There is that nurturing element that is part of the genius of women. And so trying to help women understand that the gift of self equals the deepest joy. And that's what we're going for when it comes to natural family planning and living the reality of what God gave us. If you can do this well and communicate this well to women, you will get many devoted followers and legions of volunteers to help in this ministry. Now, do we have any time to talk about communication less or no?
We're running a little short because you're trained to two, and it'll take us a little bit to get there.
Okay. Well, then let me just show you a couple of things about communicating these messages, and I'll just do this spontaneously. With natural family planning information, church teaching information on birth control, all of these issues, the permissiveness of what's going on in our culture, all of it, it's so important for you to walk on the sunny side of the street. Do not start any presentations by condemning the whole world, because people will not be able to hear you. And you know, only Jesus could condemn the whole world. So if you go through Scripture to look at the times that he did do that, just remember, he's the Son of God. You're not. He's the second person of the Trinity. He could get away with it. You can't. You have to start on the sunny side of the street. So keep a positive mindset, because people will listen to you when they see that you're not threatening. Presume their goodwill. Remember that there's a lot of ignorance that has created a lot of hurt and sorrow and sin at this point in time. Keep the light on. Be welcoming. Be Christ to the people that you meet. In fact, I like to always pray for the people that I'm meeting before I meet them so that we can have a way to speak that will be through the Lord. So sympathize with them. Let them know you understand how hard life can be. Don't judge them. There is a way of laying out facts about what negative outcomes of multiple sexual partners has done in the world, but don't incriminate the person you're speaking with. Try not to judge. Also treat adults like adults. Respect them and know your audience. Ask them. Some NFP teachers like to do things like a few questions about what people know about NFP or what people know about church teaching in order to get some of the myths out on the floor, but also so as not to do the information dump, right, because they may know some stuff. And when you define your terms, keep them simple, know your facts. Know the limits of your knowledge as well, because you don't want to be creating stuff on the spot that is incorrect. And promote only strong resources. And I can't say that enough. You've really got to rely on good resources that you can leave with people. Now, when you witness on the topic of God's design for married love, please prepare your stories in advance. And if your stories involve other people, ask for their permission to talk about it and change their names, because people often get very, very sensitive on this topic. And don't provide sensitive detail that is too much for your audience to hear. Unless you're in the type of conversation with maybe even one-on-one with a person where you understand it'll be okay to share that information. It's always better to err on the side of keeping it simple. And again, when it comes to the support of the couple, of the women, know who you can refer them to, healthcare professionals, marriage counselors, expert teachers, trained clergy. And above all, as I said, please pray for your audience before you speak with them. Pray for the individual before you work with them, because you want them to hear whatever God is trying to bring out in their lives, and you really are planting seeds. And so I'll leave you with that. Thank you. And do we have time for a few questions, Liz?
Yeah, one or two questions.
Okay. Yes. Oh, okay. It's, let me get it out here. It's, Catholic Women, let me see, Catholic Women.
Catholic that women think about faith, conscience, and contraception.
Right.
By Mary Rose Hodgson.
There you go.
Michelle Hill.
Right.
2012.
Now, they're going to be coming out with another report that unearths the rest of the research that I was referring to. But the main points that I had in this presentation are in that report. Yeah.
Is there published?
Yes, they do. You know, I don't have the full report with me. But they belong to an institute, and they published it through an institute. I think if you Google their name, you should be able to get to the site that has the full report. If not, just email me at the Bishop's Conference, nfp@usccb.org, and I can give you the reference.
And what is the name of the
publisher? No, that's what I can't remember. It's not a publisher. It's a think tank. They published the report through their think tank. I want to say it's something like Faith and Culture, something like that, but I could be thinking of another think tank. So, but feel free to email me, and I can send you whatever information you'd like. Anyone else? Yes?
I'm glad you mentioned towards the end the kind of openness to life, responsible parenthood, because to me, that, more than anything, is the problem with catching up. It's that the biggest fear in society, you know, among people I run into is the idea that they will not provide adequately for their children, and therefore they need to have a really small number of children. And I found that the church's teaching on this is kind of, it's not openness of life, I understand, but when it says responsible parenting, well, yeah, that can mean anything. I mean, you know, it's easy to say, oh, your kid doesn't need the latest car or something like that. That's fine. But what about going to a decent school or, you know?
Right.
It's easy to say responsible means I got to limit myself to two kids. And until kind of we break through that kind of idea of
right.
need, I think once that is in your program, because I think most of us that use NFP will tend to have more than two kids.
Well, you know, there was a study that Dr. Richard Faring did at Marquette University on the spiritual and emotional growth that typical NFP couples go through. And he said that there's really this, it's almost like a developmental stage where people often start with, I want to avoid pregnancy, and so they're in that stage. And people may stay in that stage for a short time or a long time, depending on the couple, but that eventually they will start growing, and they will start advancing. And so if they stick with it, they'll come to that acceptance and understanding of openness to life. Now, how can we help as NFP educators? I would say, as what you were saying, we need some support for couples. It's not for the teacher or another couple to judge what's going on in someone else's marriage. That is for the couple to discern between themselves and maybe with a spiritual director, right? So that's very hard because NFP couples, especially NFP teachers, always want to help everybody have the good that they have. And so your motivation is terrific. But you do have to know your boundaries, and you have to realize that sometimes all you could do is pray for couples. And again, the importance of witnessing to people in how you live your family lives, how you live your married lives, is going to be huge. But it's a growth process, and we could help them if we did have more of get-togethers where NFP couples can have retreats together. They can, you know, do some heart-to-heart talking and processing of the hard issues in their lives in a safe environment, you know, that kind of thing. Yes? Sure.
So that prayer
Well, and you're right, and that is exactly what we're trying to do. The bishops have put as their new priorities for the next 5 years strengthening marriage as one of them. Now, a subset of the strengthening marriage is they want us to find stronger catechetical means to let our people know about the teachings on marriage, conjugal love, responsible parenthood, and NFP in particular. They want it integrated in everything. So say, for example, if you as NFP users or teachers are on some other ministry group in your parish, there's a Bible study or there's some type of stewardship committee, whatever. If you could find ways to get your group in your parish to create something for married couples to be able to reflect on what it means to be a married couple in the sacrament of marriage. That type of activity can help open the door for a lot of people. There are many ways that you can do this. It could be when you're having baptism, preparation for the godparents and the parents to baptize their child, you can have them reflect on what it means to be living the sacrament of marriage, and having this baby now. And that's when people are receptive to looking at the gifts that the church has to offer them. Because everything you're talking about, some people are, some people just like, they float on the surface. They just have not gotten down into the deep waters. And sometimes tragedy causes people to go deeper, right? Sometimes great joy can, too. But we need to always discern within the world that you're living in, the activities that you're engaged in the parish, in being involved in this NFP association. What are the ways that you can keep bringing these messages to God's people so that the doors can be opened, the seeds can be planted? It could be little efforts, it could be organized efforts. But you're right, and the bishops do want us to do this, to integrate this in other areas of church life. Anybody over here? No? Thank you.